Well, welcome again, everybody, to the Receiving Gospel Grace Learning Lab. This is essentially podcast three of the that Learning Lab. Podcast one and two kind of explored our need for grace. These two podcasts, three and four, will kind of explore God's provision about, you know, how He provides and what He provides and for us. So last time you and I, we kind of talked about the first four pages of the Bible, our rebellion and how it broke our relationship with God. And you know, we obviously left it to say, hey, that's not the end of the story. God's grace is unfolding across history. So let's talk about that. And we're specifically going to like hop into the Old Testament, mm-hmm. I think, is what you said, and kind of go through, I think, four passages that kind of highlight. If I had to put money down, which I know betting's not a thing, but if I had to, I would say you'll dip into the New Testament as well. I don't think you can not do it. So
correct. There it is. But I think it's actually kind of a good idea, because I think sometimes we think, you know, the God of the Old Testament is the angry God and the God of the New Testament. Testament is the friendly or nice God, and one is a God of judgment, one is a God of grace and redemption. And what I think is so important to see is that it's one God all the way through, and actually you really do see the grace of God beginning to play out in the Old Testament. So, right. I mean, I'd start us right out of the gate. It's interesting. We talked about how the first four pages, everything falls apart. And even when God is bringing judgment on Adam and Eve, He tucks in a seed of hope that a day would come when an offspring of Eve would actually crush the head of the serpent who represented evil in the garden and represented the evil one. Though the serpent will crush, the serpent's head will get crushed, but actually the text also says that the serpent will strike the heel of the champion, the offspring of the woman. So the promise that is embedded in Genesis 3:15 is that there is going to be a day when there's victory, and that victory is going to come through suffering of some kind.
Now, you didn't mention an evil one last week. Who's the evil one?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I didn't mention a lot, just to be clear. I mean, I'm giving some highlights here, but you're right, I didn't. And so, yeah, I maybe the best way to understand the evil one is that he's a created angel who rebelled against God. We don't know exactly why. I think the best idea I've ever heard is just this idea that angels are glorious. They are in the presence of God. They are strong. They are powerful, ferocious, but we tend to think of that word as negative. They're not, they're mighty.
Right.
But God made them, their mission is to serve humanity. And so it makes sense maybe that somebody would say, I'm not so sure I'm in for that. Mm-hmm. And so Lucifer rebels against God's plan and is even now trying to undermine God's plan on the earth. And the thing I think that is important to keep in mind, however, is that the evil one is not a rival God. I think sometimes we think of, you know, God is the good God and the evil one is the bad God, and they're sort of in this tussle.
On your shoulders.
Yeah. He's not a rival God. He's powerful. He's influential. He led Adam and Eve astray, but God is the only God. We talked about that last podcast.
Yeah. So. Well, we could spend a gazillion hours on that. Maybe we'll do a different podcast on that someday.
Sounds good.
Back to Genesis 3, kind of keep walking us through.
Yeah, so that. God promises that a human will come someday who will defeat evil forever. That's because Adam, the first human, failed to be essentially a good and faithful king under God's direction. And so the promise is that a time will come when another human, a good and faithful king, will emerge and set things right. And to me, this is the first glimpse of God's grace. A second passage would be Genesis 12. So you're not moving too far into the story. Mm-hmm. But here we have God's call on Abraham's life. And He promises in Genesis 12, 1 to 3, to make Abraham into a great nation, which is the nation Israel, right. And And God's gracious heart for the world gets revealed in these verses, where he says, I'm going to bless you, Abraham. I'm going to make you great. And then I'm going to make you a blessing to the nations. So there's this sense in which God's plan for grace centers in on one man, Abraham, and his wife, Sarah, and then to the nation of Israel. But the heart of God is ultimately very missional to the nations. So while humanity has rejected God and God has given us over to our sin, God doesn't just leave us to our own devices. The biblical story is a story of God in pursuit. He's got a plan. He's working his plan. And it's a plan initially for Israel, but through that one nation, ultimately to bring blessing to the whole world.
Yeah. You say that, but doesn't Israel find themselves captive in Egypt? Like,
right. I mean, again, it's kind of like this story gets good and then it gets hard and then it gets good and then it gets hard. And the hard part is that they are captive in Israel. But God raises up a hero, a Moses, a champion. Moses really kind of becomes a foreshadowing of, okay, of the coming champion, the king, the good and faithful king that will come, who will win through suffering. Moses experiences both winning and suffering in leading Israel out of Egyptian captivity. So yes, God delivers Israel from that captivity.
Right. The Exodus.
Yeah, the Exodus. And understanding the Exodus, I think, is so important as Christians, because the Exodus deliverance in the Old Testament is really the paradigm for understanding God's grace in the New Testament. Think about the elements. God sets them free from mm-hmm. captivity. He guides them by his presence through the wilderness into the promised land. And all the while, God is providing for their needs. So the Exodus really is the paradigm for the New Testament.
The Exodus as paradigm for New Testament, how does that relate to grace?
So yeah, that's good. So the pieces of the Exodus, the very journey of the Exodus, is actually then mirrored in our experience of the gospel with Jesus. So through a new Moses, Jesus really plays the role of a new deliverer. The offspring of Eve, the son of Abraham, Jesus, God delivers us, not from captivity to Egypt, but captivity to sin. And he guides us through the wilderness of life, through his presence, the Holy Spirit, to the promised land, which we know in the New Testament as the new creation. And all the while in our life, he is providing for all of our needs, emotionally, physically, relationally, and certainly spiritually.
Okay. That makes sense. Gotcha. So what's our third passage? We've got our first two.
Yeah, the third one that I picked might be a little bit unusual, and that is the Ten Commandments. We don't tend to think of God's grace when we think of God's law.
Right. I don't.
But there's, you don't. Yeah, exactly. But the Ten Commandments don't begin with, "You shall have no other gods before me." It begins, "I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. So you shall have no other gods before me." So the call to obedience is actually a result of the gift of grace in deliverance. God's gracious redemption comes first, and that paves the way for our yielded obedience. We don't obey God to get his grace or to get his blessing. We actually obey him in light of his grace.
Right, which is
very different.
It's really, you talk about this all the time, the difference between the gospel and religion.
Yeah, exactly. Because religion is where you try to do a set of things or check a set of boxes. You try to appease God so he will bless you. That's religion, and it wears many faces. the gospel is God graciously blessing you through Jesus, and you discovering because of the Spirit at work in you, you actually want to obey the one who redeems mm-hmm. you. It's very, very different. Yeah. So even the Ten Commandments get it right. Our obedience flows from experiencing God's grace.
Yeah, it's so good. I think, though, and I know you're going to another passage, you know, Israel's story doesn't go very well. When I talk to students about it, we draw this up and down, this back and forth.
It's a roller coaster.
It kind of blows hot and cold over and over. God has to say, you know, what are you doing? And extend some judgment and then extend grace. I mean, we see that over and over in the Old Testament. Yeah.
What's amazing is that even in the giving of the Ten Commandments, you know, Moses comes down, and what are they doing? They're
right.
They're worshiping a golden bull calf from Egypt. It's an Egyptian bull calf. I mean, they're basically saying we actually liked it better back in captivity.
Right.
So yeah, and then you have the cycle of the judges, and then you have all the kings of Judah and of Israel. Some are good, some are not good,
right.
And that culminates then in the exile, as God, the judgment of exile. God sends Assyria into the north, he sends Babylon into Judah, and Israel and Judah experience exile again away from God.
I mean,
just like Adam was sent away from the garden and God's presence, so Israel is really a second Adam, and they fall again,
right.
And they're sent away. But here's where the grace comes in. God promises through the prophets over and over and over, look, this isn't the end of the story.
Right.
A day will come. I'm going to preserve a remnant of faithful people to me, and then a day will come where through this remnant I will do a new thing. And probably the Old Testament text that we reflect on the most as Christians with regard to this is Isaiah 53, where God's suffering servant dies for Israel's sin in particular, but also for humanity's sin, so that the blessing that God promised to Abraham back in Genesis 12 could actually begin then to flow back out to the nations as God intended all along.
It's victory through suffering, which is that Genesis 3 passage way
absolutely.
Back in the beginning.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And we know the suffering servant as Jesus.
We sure do. I mean, Jesus comes on the scene. John the Baptist. So the first page of the New Testament. We talked about the first page in the last podcast. The first
right.
pages of the first creation. The first pages of the new creation in the New Testament. John the Baptist is on the scene, and he sees Jesus, and he refers to him as God's Lamb who takes away the sin of the world. Which really is a reference, I think, back to that Isaiah 53 passage.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus himself, I mean, he understands his identity as a suffering servant. He says, I didn't come, I mean, here is the good and faithful king
right.
here to rule, but he says, I didn't
right.
come to be served. I came humbly to serve, to give my life as a ransom for many. That's gospel grace. I mean, this is the grace of the gospel. John 10, the passage where he basically says, I came that you might have life and have it abundantly, where we even got the concept of the life
right.
as the life of following Jesus. He says, I'm the good shepherd, and the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. So this was the plan. I guess the reason I spent time in the Old Testament is this was the plan all along. This isn't plan B. This is the unfolding of God's plan. God creates everything. He calls it very good. He's delighted in it. We break everything. And so then God sets out to reveal his love by redeeming us through the suffering victory of Jesus, the cross and resurrection. And that's gospel grace. And then and then we receive that as our story. We recognize ourselves in it, that we are broken and we need God's grace, and he restores us to himself. He reconciles. We talked about that last time. Mm-hmm. He adopts us. That's another metaphor that the New right. Testament uses.
Right.
He gives us the gift of himself in the Holy Spirit, who begins to transform us from the inside out into the men and women that God intended us to be all along. Mm-hmm. And then he builds relationships. He restores relationship with each other as his people, and he restores our purpose in this world to live on mission. We get to actually be a part of the fulfillment of Genesis 12, where he said, I'm going to bless you, Abraham, right. and then through you, you're going to be a blessing to the nations. By being a blessing to our neighbor, by being a blessing to our coworker and to our friends, we are living out the promise of Genesis 12, which is pretty cool. He redeems the original command to be fruitful and to multiply. That's not just physical. That's also spiritual as we introduce other people to the life, disciples making disciples, as we await the return of the King, where he will renew everything.
That's awesome. So life isn't about being rebellious. Life isn't about finding unique ways to put yourself over. Above God or over God, or being simply religious, saying that I'm going to be moral and good and nice and hit these four things. It is about receiving his grace daily and then living from that grace into the world for God's kingdom purposes.
And isn't that freeing? You know, it's like yeah. God says, let me set you free to be who I made you to be. That's yeah. the gospel.
Yeah.
God's pursuit of us is the story of the scripture. From creation to new creation, from God making everything to God making everything new with the cross and resurrection, right smack dab in the middle.
Yeah.
That's the story.
Oh, that's so good.
It is. You know, just real quickly, I know we're wrapping, but there's a moment where the Pharisees, Jesus is eating, he's hanging out at a table just like this. He's eating with sinners, tax collectors, you know, blokes like us. And the Pharisees kind of walk up and they're like, dude, what are you doing? Why are you hanging out with people like them?
Right.
And it's interesting. Jesus just starts telling a story. Mm-hmm. It's really a three-part story. It's one story, and he talks about a lost sheep and a lost coin and a lost son. And we tend to focus on the lost elements because we, I think, relate to them, frankly. But actually, he tells a story about a pursuing shepherd and a pursuing woman and a pursuing father who moves heaven and earth to recover that which was lost. And essentially Jesus is saying, that's what I'm doing. You want to know what I'm doing? Why am I eating with these sinners and pursuing them? Because I am the Father in person, as the Son. I am pursuing humanity to redeem them. And what's interesting about the sheep and the coin and the son is in each case, they don't find the shepherd and the woman and the father. In each case, they are found. And if you were to ask, you know, how did they get found? I would say they accepted being found. The coin didn't find itself. The coin's just sitting there and it accepts being found. The sheep is off on its own and it accepts being found. Even the son, you'd say, well, the son was coming home. And it's like, yeah, but the text says when the son was a long way off, the father runs toward him. And literally the text says he tackles him. He falls on his neck with love and grace. And he comes home and he says, my son was lost and now is found. So that's the story of grace. Is are we willing to say, you know what, apart from God, I'm lost.
Yeah.
And yet in Jesus, he has found me.
Yeah. And we do this, you know, in the Christian family, we do this not just once.
Yeah.
There is a moment yep. where we get to say, I accept being found.
Like conversion experience.
Yeah, yeah. But I find myself having to receive his grace yeah. daily, moment by moment, more than daily. It's not like I wake up.
Right.
If I wake up and do it at 7 a.m. and then I'm forgetting it by noon, it's you know, I need to remember his grace.
So good. I mean, that's why I love the language in Romans 5 from the last podcast. And then Paul also actually uses this language in 1 Corinthians 15 when he's talking about the gospel. He talks about grace as something we receive, and then he talks about it as something in which we stand. We have to keep standing in his grace and receiving that grace. It's like a waterfall that's just continual, so that it's not one and done. It's not that I receive his grace and then now the rest of the life is up to me. Every day is about his grace.
Right. Well, everybody, we hope this has been encouraging to you and kind of given you an understanding of the provision. I mean, God from the very first has incarnated into our world. We tend to think it's just Jesus. But no, over and over and over, he has said, I'm going to insert myself into this story so that you can know me, so that I can find you. So that's beautiful. It's awesome. And we hope you guys can hear that and receive that. And we look forward to seeing you again soon. See ya. Bye.